This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Tyne.
And I'm Bonnie North. The work of the United Nations is honored at this time each year with United Nations Week. Yesterday was UN Day. Despite a speech by President Donald Trump to the UN General Assembly last month, the place of the United States in the global political sphere is tenuous. Foreign aid and the State Department have been in the crosshairs when it comes to cuts to the federal budget.
That could mean significant shifts in the U.S. relationship with the developing world. And Steve Radelet says that would be problematic. Radelet is a professor and director of the Global Human Development Program at Georgetown University. He joined us in the studio to talk about the state of the developing world. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So you've written and spoken a lot on the state of the developing world, and I think you specifically have made the point that what is often the dominant narrative, that the developing world is basically a mess, that narrative is generally wrong. So before we go into how it's wrong, can you share what insight you have into how we got to this point? Why do we think of the developing world the way we so often do?
Well, I think it has to do with the history where for many decades and in some cases centuries, there wasn't a lot going on right back through, of course, the long history of colonialization. But then after the end of colonialization through the period of the Cold War in the 70s and 80s, there were a lot of problems. And in particular, from the mid-70s to the early 90s, most developing countries were in a mess. There was not much economic progress. Of course, there was the debt crisis in Latin America and beyond. Most developing countries were run by dictators, some of them quite nasty. There was violence and war everywhere from Southeast Asia to Central America to Southern Africa around apartheid. And it really was a mess. But that all changed in the early 90s. And what has happened, I think, is people have continued with that older narrative, even though things have quite dramatically changed in the majority of developing countries, not all, but in the majority of them.
At the same time in the early that this was changing in the early 90s, the Cold War was really wrapping up. And you know, there was a time in post-colonial days that the developing world was in a position to or had the reputation of playing the U.S. versus Soviet Union card. Where is the developing world in the geopolitical landscape
today?
Yeah,
so I'm not sure how much it was the developing countries playing the U.S. versus the Soviet Union, or was it the U.S. playing developing countries against the Soviet Union. But there was these relationships where we supported for Don Marcos in the Philippines and the Duvaliers in Haiti and Mobutu in Congo and some other pretty nasty people because they were supporting our side in the Cold War. And that changed, of course, beginning in 1989, well, beginning earlier, but really in 1989 and 90 when the wall fell and all of that changed. And so now developing countries do tend to still work closely with the United States and with other countries, but it's not the kind of alignment there was during the Cold War. And many, of course, have good relationships both with the United States and with China. Of course, not so much with Russia. A few in Eastern Europe do. But today it's mostly the United States and China. But the countries are not sort of being forced to choose one or the other, which is a good thing. They're able to work with both the United States and China and other countries. So it's really changed in many ways, and I think in a much more helpful direction.
So what is the story of the developing world that we ought to be telling today?
The story that we ought to be telling is actually for the last 25 years, there has been more progress in fighting poverty and in progress in developing countries than ever before in human history by a long shot. And it's an enormous amount of progress. In many cases, more progress than we've ever seen in the history of the world. And as we said earlier, most people are not aware of it. I'll give you a couple of facts here. First, just in terms of extreme poverty. We define extreme poverty today. The World Bank's definition is a person living under $1.90 a day, which isn't much. They use that unusual number because it happens to be the average that the countries themselves use for the poorest 16 countries in the world. But we define that as the number of people living below $1.90 a day. In 1993, there were 2 billion people around the world that were living under $1.90 a day. Today, that number is down to 700 million. So since 1993, in 25 years, less than that, more than 1.3 billion people have been lifted out of extreme poverty. There's still 700 million people that are left behind, but we have never, ever seen such rapid decline in poverty. About half of that story is China, but it's not only China. It's happening in actually more than 60 countries, developing countries around the world, from China and India, Indonesia, Korea, Malaysia, you know, in Asia, but also in South Africa, Tanzania, Ghana, Senegal, Brazil, Chile, Ecuador, Costa Rica, and many other countries, dozens of countries. So that's on poverty. And I'll just give you one other story, but there are many, which is in health. And I'll talk about child death rates. In 1960, 22% of children born in developing countries died before their fifth birthday, more than one out of five children. Today, that's down from 22% to 5%, so it's one out of 20. And still, 5% is too high, but a drop worldwide from 22% to 5% over the course of several decades, again, is unsurpassed in human history. And more people are living, they're living longer, they're living healthier, they're living outside of poverty, they're living better lives. And that story about the reduction in child death is a story about global cooperation on getting vaccines from private companies to villages in Mongolia and Mozambique that involves the United Nations, which we're celebrating this week. It involves USAID and foreign aid organizations. It involves local clinics. It involves private manufacturers of vaccines. It involves local mothers bringing their children to get vaccinated. It's actually one of the great stories of global integration and global cooperation, and it has saved millions of lives around the world.
If there is a dominant narrative that you would contend is wrong about the state of the developing world, there is also a dominant narrative about the amount that we spend on foreign aid that is likewise also wrong?
Yeah. Most people, there are many, many surveys that are taken that Americans believe that we spend something like between 10% and 20% of the federal budget on foreign aid. And in fact, we spend less than 1% of the federal budget. It's a tiny share of our budget that we contribute to fighting poverty and hunger and disease around the world. And so the amount is a mistake. And the other mistake is that people believe that it has no impact, that it doesn't work, that it's not saving lives and it's not helping with food security and fighting hunger. And it's not the case that every program works. That's true with private sector investments, public sector investments. And there are a lot of cases where things have not gone well. But over the last 20 years, most foreign aid has been quite effective in helping fight disease, reduce hunger, and fight poverty. The story on health in particular, whether it's child death or whether it's fighting HIV/AIDS or fighting malaria, there is actually no question at all that U.S. taxpayers contributing to foreign assistance have saved millions of lives around the world. That is an uncontroversial fact that all Americans can be proud of contributing to.
At the same time, you know, aside from altruistic reasons, what's at stake here? Why is it important for us to be playing this role in the developing world?
Yeah, it's a good question because people, especially these days, tend to think that this is happening in isolation from us. But it's actually, I believe, quite fundamentally important for the United States for a couple of different reasons. One, these improvements in countries around the world in health and in income levels, there's also been a big shift to democracy, which I haven't mentioned yet, are helping to build more capable states and governments that are quite helpful to us. If we want to enhance our own security around the world, we need to be able to work with capable governments and states that can fight against terrorist threats, that can fight against ISIS, that can fight against other groups that are working in northern Africa and along the Sahel. And for our own security, we need strong and capable partners. And as countries develop and come out of poverty and have higher income, they want to work with the United States. They want to work with us. So first reason is for our own national security. But the second, beyond basic security, is also to do things like fight endemic diseases and to fight transnational crime, drug trafficking. Again, we need strong and capable partners that are working with us. Another reason is for markets. As these countries grow, they provide markets for U.S. Medical supply companies and pharmaceuticals and all range of aircraft and automobiles and everything else that people buy. So developing countries are becoming some of the biggest markets in the world. 20 years ago, they were about one-third of global trade. Now they're more than half. So they're providing all kinds of markets. But I think the biggest reason why it's important for the United States is that many of these countries are moving towards more democratic systems and more economic, more open economic systems, and they are embracing the very values that the United States has claimed that it has stood for 200 years of fighting for human rights, for openness, for accountability, for people to be able to elect their own governments and hold them accountable, for open economic systems where people are free to choose what they do economically, to be able to send their kids to school. And countries are moving, trying to model themselves on the United States. And I think it is very much in our interests to help support that process so that we have more countries around the world that we can partner with that share our basic values.
So with that in mind, what have you seen in the first, not quite a year, the first 11 months or so of the Trump administration vis-a-vis the developing world?
Well, I'm worried because we are now tend to be taking an approach that when we talk about America first, it sounds an awful lot like America only, where countries around the world are getting the message that the United States doesn't really want to engage with them as much. There's a lot of talk about reducing foreign assistance and the contributions that we make to countries around the world, even programs that are very effective. Of course, there's a lot of talk about reducing trade and building all kinds of barriers, whether it's walls or other kinds of barriers. And I'm hearing from people living around the world how shocked they are and astonished because they have always looked to the United States as a model, as a partner, as someone to work with, and now they're hearing quite a different tone. And I'm worried about that. I'm worried how other countries are reacting. And more countries are looking for other leaders. And I'm hearing more often they're looking to China for leadership. And the Chinese government really is stepping into some of the void on leadership on climate change, on leadership on providing funding for infrastructure. And more countries are saying, you know, maybe the U.S. is moving in a different direction and we need to move more closely to China. So I'm worried about the current direction.
Steve Radelet, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Steve Radelet is a professor and director of the Global Human Development Program at Georgetown University. He was in Milwaukee yesterday to speak at Marquette University and the Rotary Club.